From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Now, no one wants to suffer. Suffering is something we certainly avoid. But in a year in which we have all experienced suffering and grief of some sort, even though we may not know it, we have been transformed in some way, which is what my next guest, Rabbi Steve Leader, says can happen when we deal with grief and loss in the way he explains in his new book, The Beauty of What Remains. We have a remarkable capacity to go on, says Steve, and when we must, we can. Let's hear more about that. Rabbi Steve Leader, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much, Lynn. It's great to be with you.
When I started reading about your book, in your book, I got a visceral feeling, I have to say, of not wanting to go into suffering. I want to avoid it so much. I can suffer certain sorts of way, but the grief of losing a loved one is unfathomable to me. Tell us about why we avoid it so much.
Well, is it really unfathomable to you? You think about it. And this book was an attempt to help people who think about death in such a negative and difficult and terrible way to think about it differently, to think about it from the perspective of someone like me who's seen death up close more than 1,000 times and have held more than 1,000 families as they've walked this journey through grief and loss. And it has within it some very painful and yet some very beautiful components. You know, I've come to the conclusion after all these years, I've been a rabbi for 33 plus years of a very large congregation, that death is the great teacher when it comes to leading a more beautiful and more meaningful life. And the book is my effort, at least, to bring everyone along on that journey to show us all what death teaches us about how to live. And the book also is kind of an apology, in a sense, because I was a rabbi for 30 years helping people on this journey of death and grief and loss. And I thought I was doing a pretty good job, you know, A-. And then my father died. And I had to explore that tension between Steve Leader, the rabbi, and Steve Leader, the son. And the book is also about that journey. And what I learned from my father's 10 years of Alzheimer's and his death is that everything I had been teaching and saying those previous 30 years was, as I say in the prologue, just one degree shy of the deepest truth. Mm-hmm. And I want to bring the reader that one degree deeper to the truth of what death comes to teach us about life. Because in my view, it's really the only thing that teaches us to value and make our lives more beautiful.
How different has it been since your father passed away for you to share and encourage people through grief and suffering on their own? You know, juxtaposing that with how you were before, which was always very comforting from what I've been reading about how you get people to even go and look at their loved one now deceased in the casket at the funeral home.
Yeah. Well, there were two or three major adjustments in my thinking and feelings about death and grief as a result of my father's death. The first is that I'm of a generation that was raised on the science of grief that told us there were stages to grief. That first you will feel A, then you'll feel B, then you feel C, then you feel D, and then it's over. And I say in the book that anyone who believes the shortest distance between two points is a straight line doesn't understand grief, because grief is non-linear. And I learned that as a result of my own pain at the loss of my father. What I prefer is a wave metaphor. That grief is like waves. They come very close together and they're very large and powerful at first. And they do spread out. They do come further apart. And then you can have very calm, beautiful seas for a week, a month, a year, a decade even. And then when your back is turned, there's a rogue wave of grief and it just takes you down. And to extend that metaphor, Lynn, what do we do when we're faced with a wave? When we see it coming at us, we feel it coming at us. We have two choices. Before my father died, the old Steve leader would stand in front of a wave, chest forward, face forward, feet planted. I am going to take this wave. I am stronger than this wave. I am holding my ground. And we all know what happens to that person. You end up upside down, thrown against the rocks, gasping for air. What my father's death taught me about grief when it comes is that it's much better, like a wave, to lie down, let it wash over you, and float with it until you can stand up again. So that's one of the things I learned. You know, I used to say to people, it won't always hurt so much. I don't say that anymore. Now I say, it won't always hurt so often, because that's the truth. And that's that one degree I was talking about. The other thing that it caused me to reassess, which I write about quite a bit in the book, is memory. I never really understood the duality of memory until my father died. And by that, I mean, we have all these platitudes around memory and our loved ones who died. Oh, may his memory be a blessing. She'll live on in our memories. All of which is true, but there's a duality to memory. Yes, memory is beautiful. And it really, really hurts. It's both. In the book, I say it's like being caressed and spat on at the same time. You know, it's this whipsaw that if we can tell the truth about it, it's much easier to make peace with. And so that was yet another really important shift that I write about in the book between what I thought I knew and what death actually taught me about memory.
If you're just joining me on The Mountain Life, my guest is Rabbi Steve Leader. When I was reading about this aspect of letting it wash over you, sort of embracing the pain and the grief, and that's a way of dealing with it, it made me think about childbirth. Now, obviously you've not been through
childbirth. Yeah, you're going to have to take over here, Lynn.
Exactly. Well, you know, the concept is if you fight the pain during a contraction, you're going to feel that the pain's going to be too big for you to handle. Whereas if you go into the pain, much like if you go into the suffering and the grief, you're going to be able to just bring it on. And I just sort of wonder physiologically and emotionally at the same time, how that concept works, you know, because we don't want it. We generally, as I said in the intro, we avoid pain and suffering.
Yes, but the more you avoid it, the worse it is. Mm-hmm. You know that there's that old folk song I learned at camp, so big you can't get over it, so low you can't get under it, so wide you can't get around it, you got to go through that door.
Yeah.
You have to walk that valley. You just have to walk that valley. Now, one of the important things is not walking it alone. Right? No one endures suffering better alone. No one. There's a beautiful line of the sages that says, the prisoner cannot free himself. The prisoner cannot free himself. So when we're in pain, we need to reach out to people we love and who love us. And when we see others in pain, we need to reach out to them. No one suffers grief and loss better alone. We really need each other. And, you know, as I put it in the book, that changes nothing, but it means everything. Mm-hmm.
The book is The Beauty of What Remains. Steve, we have all dealt with grief during the last year, and it's not necessarily the grief of losing someone. It could even be the grief of, you know, succumbing in some way.
Well, there's what you're talking about is loss.
Yeah.
Right? Loss is loss. We've all of us, and I don't think we fully acknowledge it and understand why we feel so intermittently depressed and anxious. We've all lost our freedom. We've lost our sense of invulnerability. We've lost money and businesses. We've lost loved ones. We've lost the right for our children to be in school, which is where they belong. And most, I think, crushing of all, we've lost the ability to touch each other, to hold each other, to hug each other. I have an 87-year-old mother in Minneapolis. I haven't hugged my mother in a year. So we are all suffering loss. You're exactly right.
And that loss that we have all suffered has, at the same time, as you say, it has transformed us because it's turned us into more passionate, empathic people. And this is a gift. And yet, if we have a hard time seeing that, how can, what do you say to help us along on that path?
Well, I think that we need to sort of make a list of COVID confessions, the things about our lives that are better because of how we're living now, the fact that we're having dinner with our families every night, that we're not running around on the freeway, stuck in traffic, cursing because we're late to a meeting with three or four people we could have just as easily Zoomed with. I have a closet full of uncomfortable clothes upstairs that I don't think I'm ever going to put on again, except for a wedding or a funeral. You know, I have found the joy of a walk in my neighborhood. You know, the joy of baking bread with my wife. I never did these things. And I'm not for a moment trying to dismiss the extraordinary pain and suffering of this pandemic. It's staggering. So I'm not saying that any of these newfound ways of living are worth it. I'm just saying neither are they worthless. There is always an upside to the downside. And for me, I'm not going back to my old ways. It's also, by the way, this is sort of an interesting one. I'm 60 years old. It has given me a deep appreciation for a generation that I maligned. I maligned millennials. They don't think going to the office is important. They have virtual lives. You know, guess what? They were right. They were right. So there are a lot of things I've learned and grown from as a result of this pandemic. And also, I think we all now really do understand in a new way that our lives really are in each other's hands. They really, really are. And we really need to take care of each other. We have a mutual responsibility to take care of each other. And by the way, just to make the point about death being the only teacher, do you think, I'll ask you, do you think if this virus lacked the lethality that it has, if it wasn't so deadly, do you think the world would have paused to embrace these new lessons?
No, probably not.
Not a chance. And this is an example of how powerful, what a powerful teacher death is when it comes to teaching us how to live our lives.
Over the holidays, we received for Christmas a picture book, and it was called The Very Best of COVID. And it was from our son's girlfriend, who spent a lot, months and months and months with us.
Yeah.
Once, because we all needed to hunker down together, and she came to our place, and we spent, she had pictures of some wonderful camping trips, but the pictures that kind of hit me most that I will look back on as a time and just, I'll never forget it in my life, was in April. I mean, as you know, Park City, Utah is a very snowy place. And as April was dawning, and there were a few afternoons where you could take a chair and sit out in the driveway and have the sun shine on you and watch your neighbors walk by. And then perhaps have a conversation with them through your masks. It was such a gift.
Yes.
And you're right. You know, if we hadn't had the lethality and the seriousness of this crisis, we would never have appreciated sitting in a driveway.
And you know, my son has a girlfriend, and she spent a huge amount of time with us during the pandemic. And it was very old fashioned how their relationship evolved during the pandemic. They would take walks, you know, they would cook together. They would sit outside in the backyard together. You know, it was very like old fashioned courting in a way. The way sitting out on your front porch for you or your driveway and saying hi to your neighbors, it's back to a simpler and in some ways better time. Mm-hmm. The question will be, of course, is can we hold on? Will there be beauty that remains from this? Or will we all just revert to our default settings? We'll have to see. I think this was big enough and broad enough that it is going to create some permanent change, or at least permanent within the generations who experienced it, much like the Depression did for our parents or grandparents or great-grandparents. Mm-hmm. So I know that death has taught me so much about how to ennoble my life with more meaning. And you're right about these little things being what matter. You know, if you go to the cemetery, which I do a lot, 3 or 4 times a week, I'm always struck by the unanimity of the inscriptions on the headstones. You know, we're all unique individuals, but our headstones almost all say the same thing at the end of our lives, which is loving wife, mother, grandmother, friend. Loving husband, father, grandfather, friend. That's it. Because when you have to distill a person's life down to 15 characters per line and you get 4 lines, that is an exercise in a very productive essentialism. What really matters? And it's not what you did for work, and it's not how much time you spent on the freeway, and it's not how much crap you bought or collected in your life, and it's not your kid's GPA or your grandchild's GPA or your zip code. None of it. The only thing that really matters ultimately is the quality of our relationships with the handful, and none of us have more than a handful of people who really, really matter. That's it. And if you can remember that in life, you're going to have a beautiful life.
Mm. Your book is coming out this month, January. And I'm curious, so obviously you've been writing it during COVID, and I'm curious if the title, The Beauty of What Remains, was influenced by what we're all going through, because it's a common theme, like what will we take from this lesson and how will we go forward? And it's such a pertinent, salient title.
Yeah, but to be honest, I started the book 2 years ago. Mm. And always with that title in mind. The reason it's so germane to what we're all going through right now is not because it was written for the pandemic, although I did write the last draft during the pandemic, so I was able to put some pandemic insights and references into the manuscript, but primarily it was written before. The reason it holds up and lands and I think is embracing people so much right now, and people are embracing the book, is because there are some basic, fundamental, and very powerful truths about loss that apply to all types of loss. And that's why I think it's ringing so true right now, even though most of it was written before the pandemic.
It's nice to know that even someone like you who has walked in the company of grief and death of so many people in your congregation, and you went through it to a huge degree by the death of your own father several years ago, that even you are learning you've gone through now.
Yes, yes. And I continue to with each loss that I endure. But some of the fundamentals that I learned as a result of my personal loss really helped me, really helped me. And they've helped me through this pandemic. Learning to, as we talked earlier, learning to float with things that you can't control, waiting until you can stand up again. You know, it's a counterintuitive point, but quite true that sometimes we can only move forward if we stand still. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an old saying in the ER rooms and in the military, which is don't just do something, stand there. Isn't that great?
I've never heard that.
Yeah. They say it in ERs and in battle. Don't just do something. Stand there. Stop. Look around. Take it in. Sit with it. Think about it. And then move.
Wow. I love that. The Beauty of What Remains. It's a heartfelt narrative filled with laughter and tears, the wisdom of millennia and modernity, and ultimately an acknowledgement of the profound truth that if we can understand death and loss, we can learn how to truly live. I just love those words that you speak, that you write. And also letting go of this notion of that there are these stages of grief and that you move through it in this way and you get down the other side and there you are, you're done.
Yeah, like it's some kind of rash that clears up until you know it's gone. It's just not true.
Rabbi Steve Leder, I'm so pleased you could join me today on The Mountain Life. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lynn. It's been an honor to be with you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.